From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move ever more into the summer, heading almost toward fall, and so much happening here in the diocese, so much happening in our world, and we'll try to get to much of it as we can. I appreciate you all being with us here on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to welcome in Noel Kammerman, who is the Executive Director of Loaves and Fishes here in Sacramento. Noel, good day to you.
Good day to you, sir. How are you?
Doing very, very well. All things considered.
Yeah, we always have to throw that qualifier in there, I suppose.
There's a lot going on and a lot to absorb. Yeah, you know, when this all first hit, it seems as if it all started with one NBA player having a positive test for COVID, and all of a sudden, like 2 days later, all the schools in the country were closed virtually. So many things ceased. People started working from home. Those who still had jobs, people started getting laid off. People started getting very sick. A number of people started dying. And we still, I think, during so much of that time, thought this is going to be a very temporary situation. This is going to come and go like the flu. And indeed, it hasn't. It seemed as if it had peaked and come back down as everybody predicted, and now it seems once again to be soaring again, and especially in California.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride this year.
Yes,
this is not how 2020 was supposed to go, but here we are, and I think we're certainly trying to do our best in terms of just navigating the situation, making sure that we can do what we can to minimize risk for not just our staff and volunteers, but also our guests here at Loaves and Fishes. And I think everyone's been kind of making adjustments, regardless of the workplace or home life, to just figure out life in the midst of a pandemic and with COVID-19. So this has certainly been a challenging length of time here.
In terms of, I know obviously you have a staff, but you also rely greatly on volunteers. Frequently, volunteers are in the quote-unquote senior category, and many of those people have been advised, sometimes against their will, to stay inside, you know. And I know that volunteering to help people is one of the great gifts we have, and to take that away is really difficult for people.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have thousands of volunteers that come in and help us all throughout the year at different points in time. We probably have anywhere. Back in the normal days, we probably had anywhere from 50 to 100 volunteers on site during a given day. Since the pandemic, we've certainly scaled that back a lot. Initially, we reined that in a whole bunch because we were just concerned for everyone's safety. We didn't really, we were still trying to find our way through, like, all right, so how do we do what we do and help who we help, but in a safe manner to ensure that people can still follow all the guidance and distancing and all that, and it took us a while for us to figure it out, and then we did, and we started inviting people back. So our volunteerism is not what it was, out of a matter of just health and safety and just trying to make sure that we can kind of space people out. The volunteers have been trickling back in, lending a hand where they can and where they're comfortable. So everyone's kind of coming back and doing their thing, and it's certainly needed. Our guests certainly appreciate it and appreciate the staff and the volunteers are coming back every day to lend a hand and help them out. So doing what we can.
What is I know that you have many sort of different tasks there. What does a volunteer do at Loaves and Fishes?
Well, it depends on the program. We have a lot of volunteers that even though like, so for instance, our breakfast program that we still have, it's volunteer-led, where volunteer groups will put together individually packaged lunches, and previously they would come on site and serve those lunches themselves. Now we have a team of staff that will distribute those lunches, and a lot of times the lunches are still put together, and they go right out to the guests every morning, and that's our main breakfast program at this point in time. Mm-hmm. We used to also have one with our Mary House program, which is for single women and families, but we weren't able to have people inside and dining, and so we've kind of combined the efforts there and still provide a grab-and-go breakfast every morning, and that's all volunteer-led at that point in time. A lot of volunteers also still come in and will help prep food in the dining room. Now, we don't serve food in the dining room in the same way that we did, mm-hmm. And instead everything is served in a to-go box in a bottle or two of water for folks to take with them, and that has been a way to, for us to continue that main dining room service, and that's always been our claim to fame here.
Sure.
We haven't missed a day of service, pandemic or no pandemic, outside of our usual, day off for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you get one day off a year.
Yeah, our dining room is only closed on Thanksgiving Day. So, and that's because we have so many other folks in the community stepping up to do a nice Thanksgiving dinner. I'm not sure if that's going to hold true this year, and we're going to look and see kind of what's happening out in the community, because if we don't have some of the usual suspects coming out to lend a hand on Thanksgiving, maybe we'll do our thing that day. So it's certainly, we're no stranger to putting together and thinking on our feet, and putting together a nice meal for everybody. So we're going to wait and see what that's going to look like.
So with the quote unquote grab and go, you're not putting people in a dining room and et cetera. Where do people eat this? Do they take it and leave the premises? Is there a place on the premises they can eat? How does that work?
Right now, we don't have a place on the premises where people can sit down and eat, although people will just kind of find a quiet spot, and we've got extra trash cans and stuff around to try and help clean up with the garbage, mm-hmm. Afterwards and provide people, and we're still doing restrooms and bathrooms and showers on a limited basis as well. So we've still got a lot of our services available. It's just people aren't able to come in and out of the buildings and in and out of the programs in the same way, because we're trying to make sure that we're not overcrowding any one space. So there's all that to take into consideration too. So, and that's, and that's the new thing for this year. But at the same time, and as we're trying to provide survival services for people that don't have access to any of these amenities on the regular, it's absolutely critical that Loaves and Fishes is here and helping who we can each and every day.
Are there any of the programs that you previously had that you had to actually just say, we can't do this right now?
Initially, yes. I want to say right now, but at the same time, our programs have all just kind of changed up, and everyone is trying to do what they can. So, for Mustard Seed School, right now it's obviously difficult to, we're trying to look at the upcoming school year and figure out what kind of services we can provide to the kids, because an out-and-out school setting, face-to-face in a classroom, is a difficult prospect. And certainly there aren't any schools that are going to be meeting in classrooms, mm-hmm. For the coming school year. But I've got teachers that are willing to do, we can do some one-on-one stuff and provide what survival services and basic educational services on a very one-off basis. So it's actually, we've gone to set up an actual COVID-19 specific program to still meet the needs of our kids and families. Our Genesis mental health program, where we do mental health counseling for anyone that needs it, they're not meeting with people face-to-face in the buildings, but if we need to do something face-to-face, we do it outside. Otherwise, we're doing a lot over the telephone these days, which isn't ideal, but at the same time, it's still, we have a lot of folks that rely on us and rely on us to help get them through the day, whether that is with food, whether that is from a mental health component, whatever we can do, we're trying to be here in whatever capacity we can make that happen.
Is your food, is what percentage of it is in-kind donations? What percentage of it do you have to go out and purchase, whether it's from, low-cost or just a grocery store or et cetera? How does the food come into Loaves and Fishes?
We receive food from some of the food banks around here. Mm-hmm. We receive some donations. At one point in time, someone dropped off a whole butchered and prepared hog.
Oh my goodness!
Integrated into the meal. We get all kinds of just different stuff, and as long as it is something that we're allowed to accept in accordance with FDA and food handling standards,
right?
We'll try and work it in. And so we do purchase a lot of food because when you're cooking in bulk and when you're doing lunches that are in excess, anywhere from 400 to 750 meals at a time, you have to make some purchases in bulk. So we have some grants that come in that help us out with some of those food purchases. Some of those we just work with our local food distributors,
mm-hmm.
And they work with us where they can. So it's by hook or by crook, whatever. Wherever we can get bottom dollar and wherever we can find something that's going to work for the guests here, that's what we try and do.
The fact that we're now into summer when a lot of the bounty of California is ripening, et cetera, does that help at all, or do you get those sorts of donations?
Yeah, we get some fresh produce in here, and it's always nice when it does come in. So, and we have a few of our own gardens here on site. Well, we're mm-hmm. always, we'll go grab some tomatoes and throw them into the salad. We'll go grab, whatever we have on hand and that we can start integrating into the meals. So our kitchen and our dining room director, as well as our head chef, are absolutely amazing at kind of looking at what we've got and putting together a really, nutritious and hearty meal that will hopefully get folks through the day, especially if that's the only meal that they're going to have.
We're talking with Noel Kammerman, the executive director of Loaves and Fishes here in Sacramento. The California unemployment rate hovering 14-15%, went down a little bit a month or two ago. So many of the people that are newly unemployed are people that were on the lower end of the wage scale to begin with. Has this increased homelessness in this area that you can tell or not?
Anecdotally, it seems like it has. We've seen new faces, especially at the beginning of COVID when there weren't some of the eviction protections
mm-hmm.
and some of those other things in place. So we were seeing a lot of new faces here. At the same time, there were a lot of other services that kind of went offline or shut down in response to the pandemic, and we've been working our tails off to try and make sure that we're open and helping folks out. So there's also that situation where you've got people that used to get services at another program around here, and now they're coming to us because we're what's here. And so there was all that too. So our numbers have definitely increased. And on top of that, we're working with the COVID-19 homeless response team here in Sacramento, and we're prepping in excess of 200 meals extra each day for those to be taken out to people that are out in encampments that are trying to just stay bunkered in and minimize how much they come around other folks.
We're... Congress right now, of course, talking about a stimulus package. Does that, whatever they come up with, not necessarily specifically this one, but in previous ones, do you benefit from that in some way, shape, or form?
No, Loaves and Fishes would not benefit from that directly. I mean, mm-hmm. we've never accepted any government funding
right.
for our services. And even in the course of this pandemic, we still haven't. I mean, even though we have an opportunity to when we could, we've been able to through just private donations and grants and everything else, still continue to do what we're doing. It's been a model that it's a model of fundraising that we've practiced since we started 37, 38 years ago. And we're still able to make that work based on the amazing donors and supporters of Loaves and Fishes. And so we're going to continue that model, and it's even though it's sometimes it's challenging and all that, but it allows us to have a little more flexibility. It allows us to run a little bit leaner, so we don't have to have some of the extra administrative staff or anything else to track and report and do all those different things for the government. And it allows us to advocate for the needs of our guests with a pretty clear conscience, so that if we see an issue, we're not afraid to call people out or talk to people about what our concerns are and how we can best help people experiencing homelessness.
So, obviously, sort of less money to go around right now. Some charities are reporting that the donations are down. Others are reporting that it's up. This is a very generous area, this whole Sacramento area, the whole Central Valley. How have your donations been affected?
I think, well, the year's not done yet.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say. So I would say that the first 6 months here, we've been doing okay. I'm not sure if it's because, you know, people were trying to just help us out and give us their yearly donation all at once at the beginning of the year. And there's that concern that maybe we're not going to see the giving coming in the later half of the year during the holidays or anything like that. I hope that's not the case. We're certainly, we have some additional expenses around COVID-19 and some other challenges just with having to change up our services and you know, and now we're spending money on to-go boxes and bottled water and we've been getting some very generous donations to help out on some of these things, and you know, the things we're spending a little bit more money on it to make it all happen. So the jury's still out right now. We're not out of the woods yet, and even though we've had a pretty solid first 6 months of the year, there's a lot left in this year, and I'm certainly concerned for how the year's going to wrap up here. So I'm hoping that the community is still able to help us out with the same generosity that they've supported us with for over the years here.
So several months ago, many Americans received stimulus checks. Are any of your guests getting stimulus? I mean, there's obviously talk of another round of stimulus checks that probably will happen in the next month or so. Are any of your guests receiving those? Or are they eligible for those? Or are they, even if eligible, are they hard to find? How has that worked out for your guests?
So they are eligible. In many cases, for the stimulus checks. At the same time, there's this is something we're trying to help people out with, in terms of filling out the paperwork and getting applications in for those stimulus checks. Mm-hmm. There's some challenges and barriers there, especially if someone doesn't have an address with which they receive mail.
Right.
And so, I mean, at that first round there was for $1,200. At maximum, and for many of our guests, that amount of money, I mean, that could change their life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so that's why we were trying to help facilitate some of that, and I wish we were able to do a little bit more on that front, but we're trying to help out where we can. Find their way into an apartment, then they're no longer homeless, and they can start finding another income and hopefully stay out and stay in their own space.
Yeah, I mean the main one problem was if you're waiting for a physical check, it was going to take a lot longer than if you had a bank account that they could direct deposit. But even if you had a bank account, if the feds didn't have the information about your bank account, it wasn't going to happen. And so some people it happened very quickly, very automatically, and other people. Last figure I saw, there were still 11 million Americans who had received nothing.
Yeah, I mean, there's some pretty big barriers for people to receive those stimulus checks, especially if you don't have a place to hang your hat. And, you know, if there's the need for, there's the physical check that could come, which if you don't have an address, it's hard to receive mail. If you don't, you know, to have a bank account for a direct deposit, a lot of times you still need an address.
Right.
Where you can receive statements and all that, and that's another barrier there, so... Yeah, I had hoped that more of our guests would be able to receive some of that stimulus money, and it would be a good start for them to try and find their way off the streets. And unfortunately, I don't think nearly as many have received it as were eligible.
Wow. So speaking of checks, whether it's a government check or maybe somebody did a little bit of work and got paid with a personal check, checks frequently are very hard for people to cash. Are you able to help your guests in that kind of situation?
We're not a check cashing service here,
right,
or a payee service here. We previously had a payee service located across the street, and then when COVID hit, I think that they had to close down mm-hmm. that particular office. They still have another office located somewhere in the neck of the woods here, but it's a little bit of a hike for our guests. So previously, they could just come to our campus, go take care of this service across the street from us, and then come back to us for a meal or other services or a shower. Now they don't. It's not all kind of located in the same general area. So now there's some barriers of just physical location now for some of these services, which is new that our guests, as resilient as they are still having to find a way to navigate through.
We hear, I've heard it so many times, you know, if things get repeated enough, they become facts. One thing I keep hearing anecdotally is the homeless aren't getting COVID with the same degree as other people. Is there any truth to that? And if so, can you explain it?
I don't know how much truth there is to that. And here's why. I don't think that people who are experiencing homelessness are getting tested at the same rate.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time we talked, I mentioned there's a shelter out on the East Coast where they tested everybody at the time, and this
right.
is when tests were more widely available, and you could actually turn them around in a quick amount of time. And they found that, I mean, just under half of the people in that shelter were all positive for COVID,
wow.
but they were all asymptomatic.
Yep.
Which is, on one hand, it's amazing that they were all symptomatic, and on the other hand, it's also pretty scary that there was that high a frequency of people
mm-hmm.
all staying in the shelter that were walking around with it and they didn't know that they had it.
Right.
And so that just allows it to spread that much more easily, especially if someone doesn't have the symptoms, and that's kind of what we have to go off of.
Right.
Then it's still going to get spread around.
And I can see even if you had mild symptoms and you just said, well, I've got a cold, I've got a bug of some kind, and if it doesn't get critical, you just deal with it, and one day you get better, and nobody even knows you had it.
Yeah. So it's a tough thing to say. I don't think that we have enough information to really say one way or the other, unfortunately. But we're also running into this challenge for everyone at this point in time. It was, I had requested a COVID test. It was closer to the beginning of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And only because I'm out and about and I'm on the campus every day and
right.
I see a lot of people and I cross a lot of paths, and it would just be, I wanted to just get tested for the sake of it.
Right.
I don't know that I could at this point in time, but when I was able to schedule it through my medical provider, it was a week out. And then I just got the results today, and it's essentially 9 days after.
Wow.
So when I originally requested the test, so 9 days plus 7 days from the original scheduling, so it was about 16 days before I could get a definitive answer on whether I was positive or negative.
Wow.
On the day that I was tested.
Yeah, on the day that you were tested. Yeah,
which
so, means even if it's negative, you could have been
reinfected.
You could have been infected in that 16-day period. Also, who knows? We're all human. If you get tested today and you feel okay, are you going to self quarantine until you get your results? You know, most people, I think, aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so. Right now, I think we've got some really big challenges with testing, and testing would be great because it would allow us to get out in front of this thing if we could know within a definitive 2 to 3 days from the day of testing. And that would help us to get our hands around this thing. And unfortunately, it takes a while to get a test. It takes a while longer to receive the results of that test. And it's not a great way for us to really capture how, you know, who's infected and who isn't. So there's some big challenges there that we're all kind of facing. And I think everyone is kind of doing the best they can on this whole thing. And as the numbers have gone up, I feel like until we can get our hands around the testing, and obviously a vaccine would be, you know, that would be the way to go, but we don't have that yet. Sounds like they're getting close, but it's still a ways out. And until then, we really need to have our hands around the testing on this one so that we can really identify who has it, who doesn't, and then we can make better decisions at that point in time.
Yeah, if your guests or you were a member of a Major League Baseball team, you'd get tested right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'd get your results right now.
Yeah.
It is an interesting gap in medical care in our country. You mentioned vaccine, and we don't know, and yet we're seeing promising signs, and we're all praying and hoping for that. With your guests, would they? Is it just another one of those gaps I see? Would they be likely, whether on a personal basis, to get the vaccine? Number one, number two, would they be first in line, last in line, as they are from many other things? How would that work for them if suddenly we say we've got a vaccine?
I think it depends on how it's rolled out. We would certainly want to engage with whether it's the county, whether it's the local FQHC well space there, whether it is other medical providers. And when we're at that point, I'll open up the campus and invite anyone from the medical community to come in and administer vaccines to folks. As soon as we have a solution on this thing, I'll open the doors and invite people in, because we're a major touch point for the homeless community. We see still a lot of people here every day. When we were, you know, fully open, we were probably about 1,000 people a day, and we're probably still with somewhere between 500 and 750 a day, just with everyone that we touch here on the day-to-day. So even with a limited campus and limited access, it's still a lot of people come here every single day for help. So,
well, that's encouraging. And the other part about a vaccine, when nobody knows at this point, is going to be cost. Hopefully, at least people in low income or no income would be eligible for hopefully free or very, very low cost vaccination.
I think that's the hope. And I think that would be the global expectation at this point in time, is that, look, if there's a vaccine, we need to make sure that everyone gets it. Otherwise, it's no good. We're not going to be able to get our hands around this thing. So,
you know, you just, boy, I'll tell you, I mean, what, 350, 60 million Americans, and we don't even know if the vaccine is going to be the first one is going to be developed in this country. It may come from someplace else.
Yeah, well, so what I've read is that they have one here in the U.S. that it's in its testing phase, and they won't have a definitive answer on that one until November, which is encouraging that we're having any options for a vaccine in 2020 at this point in time, because of how long it usually takes to make that happen. But I also read, I want to say on CNN today, that Russia is pushing out a vaccine. They're just skipping the testing phase, and they're just getting it out. So I thought that was interesting.
It's interesting, fairly scary, but
yeah, I know, and that's scary from another aspect there too. So I don't know. I think folks are getting closer and closer on this thing, and hopefully, as different versions of a vaccine become available, hopefully there'll be some sort of comparison in terms of how effective they are. And then we'll eventually figure out what's the best, uh, what's what's the best vaccine to use.
Yeah, I've been intrigued. I kind of figured there was sort of one formula for a vaccine, and each disease having its own special qualities that they had to work with, but sort of one formula. And yet you read about it, and one group is doing some sort of more of the traditional type vaccine, another one's doing something completely different, a different approach. It's been very interesting. It's interesting if you're just sitting here healthy and just kind of biding your time. It's probably not anywhere near as interesting if you're sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, what I'm also hopeful with is that the folks in the medical community, it sounds like they're getting more and more savvy with
yep.
how to address the symptoms of COVID-19.
Yeah.
So the people who have the more extreme symptoms and have to go to the hospital, I think they're figuring it out a little bit better. So hopefully it's going to get the mortality rate down a little bit, but ultimately, I think we're all pushing for a mortality rate of zero at some point in
yeah.
time, because the number of lives that have been lost to this virus, it's scary.
It is.
Impacting and hurting a lot of people and families, and I hope that an end is going to be in sight sometime soon.
Yeah, amen. Noel, how can our listeners help Loaves and Fishes?
Well, we are still open for business. We haven't missed a meal on a day. We're still doing our thing here. So we still have a lot of ongoing needs. We give a lot of different survival supplies out to our guests who are experiencing homelessness. Sometimes that's sleeping bags, blankets, and tarps. Sometimes that is toiletry and hygiene items. We do a lot of hygiene items for women out of Mary House. A lot of diapers and wipes for kids and homeless families. And so if folks are able to check out our website, it's sackloaves.org. That's sackloaves.org. We have a button for our needs list at the top of our website that lists off a lot of items. Another big thing that we have coming up here is we're doing a big pitch and push for toilet paper. We do an annual toilet paper collection every year.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's going to be a little bit different because obviously there's a lot of concerns about people coming in and doing that face-to-face drop-off. But we've got a great warehouse team that can accept donations of big blocks of toilet paper. And now that, especially now that toilet paper is more readily available, and it's an easier item to come by. So we're trying to make that push right now. And depending on how much toilet paper we collect, if we have enough to sustain Loaves and Fishes, and we try to also share that toilet paper with other
mm-hmm.
Nonprofits in the community here, so that they can also help address the hygiene needs of our guests.
Very good. Well, Noel, always a joy to talk with you. Thanks for all the great work you do, and our prayers and best wishes go with you, and one day we're going to be out of this thing.
I hope so, and I hope it's sometime soon. So
yes.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Y'all are absolutely wonderful, and please stay safe and healthy, and feel free to reach out if you ever need anything.
Very good. God bless. Thanks so much, Noel. That's Noel Kammerman, who's the executive director of Loaves and Fishes here in Sacramento. And the one thing they always need, too, is bottled water. That's a big one that they need. You can, go to some of those major things and drop off the bottled water at Loaves and Fishes. We'll take a quick break here. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister Maria, for that fine introduction, and thanks for all you do for our great vocations department here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Well, in other years, other dates, as we move through July and on into August, we'd be just anticipating with great joy the opening of our Catholic schools. A different year, though, obviously, and Lori Power from the schools department joins us now. Lori, good day to you. Good to talk with you.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Doing fine. Sheltering in place with four teenagers and my wife.
God bless you.
God did bless me, but didn't tell me we were going to be quarantined.
Yeah, that's quite a penance, right?
Yes. But some great family time. Really, really, you know, I mean, gee, we're all eating dinner together again.
You know, I'm hearing that a lot about families. Like, they're really, as much as they're driving each other crazy, it's really a memorable time for them as a family because they're able to spend that time that they normally wouldn't together. So
yeah, now you can argue about who just bought Park Place on the Monopoly board instead of...
That's a good thing to argue about.
Actually, it is a good thing to argue. Yeah. I say that every day. I say, if this is our biggest problem, we're doing pretty good, considering what a lot of other people are facing.
Yeah, it sounds so wholesome and so 1950s, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it really does.
Yeah.
Really, really does.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, so where are we?
Oh, I don't know.
Besides Sacramento, where are we?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we keep writing these protocols, and things change daily. You know, it's really hard to have something written in stone because it's just such a fluid situation. And you know that, just watching the news. It's, you know, in the governor's press conferences, it's just constantly changing. And our schools all sit in 11 different counties, and that's the difficult part of what we're doing from a diocesan perspective, because it's not like a school district that is in one county,
right?
You know, and has to deal with one county's public health department. We have 11, so we're all over the board. We have four schools that are actually opening their on-campus instruction on August 17th.
They are not in those counties that are on the watch list. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. So we have four of those. So they'll be starting, well, God willing, you know, like I said, as of today, it could change tomorrow, but as of today, they'll be starting on time in on campus.
So that would be where.
So we have St. Joseph in Redding and right. Sacred Heart in Red Bluff.
Right.
And then we have Mount St. Mary's in Grass Valley, because that's Nevada County. And then we have
Holy Trinity.
Holy Trinity in El Dorado. Right.
Very good.
Yes, we have those four that are not on the watch list.
I write a daily newspaper column, and it tends to be pretty topical. And generally, you have a midnight deadline for the next day's paper.
Right.
And even if it's 1 minute to midnight, I know there's a very good chance that what I just wrote is going to have already been superseded by the next morning.
Yeah, it's
and
all
and everybody's going to pick up the paper and go, "What? This guy's crazy."
Yeah.
Doesn't he know that something?
Yeah, that blah 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 happened.
Yeah,
right.
That California just fell off into the Pacific Ocean. He wasn't aware of that.
I think we already have, actually.
I think we have. Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, it is. You're right. It changes by the minute.
It does. It does, and it's so unfortunate. For many reasons, it's unfortunate. But you know, our parents' lives are so uncertain right now, in so many ways, and their children's education is a priority, and we would love to be able to say this is exactly what's going to happen, for their sake and for their children's sake, so they have an idea or some kind of some way to breathe that they know this is gonna take place, but we can't guarantee anything. But our plan, is moving forward with hopefully as soon as our schools in each county are off the watch list for 14 days, we're going to have our kids back on campus. We've already had our protocols approved back in May by the counties. So we've had incredible protocols that our schools have written. We had a version 1, we had a version 2, and now they just completed version 3 mm-hmm. to keep up with what the counties are expecting. They're ready to go. Our principals have been and staff have been working all summer long getting our campuses ready to make sure that they are, completely sanitized, and we have all our hygiene measures in place, and the posters and the 6 feet apart, stickers on the floors, and everything ready to go. So our schools are ready to receive kids. We just have to wait to get the green light.
So we're talking about the watch list, and the government made it pretty clear that if you're on that, your county is on that watch list, no reopening for in-person, and it doesn't matter if you're a public school or a private school or,
right.
or what you are. But there was this one little crack in the door called a waiver.
Yeah, so the waiver is really it's really a unique situation because I know it was introduced before the counties had an opportunity to create the procedures for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still trying to figure that piece out.
Mm-hmm.
So that is very much up in the air. As soon as we can do those, we will attempt to get those done. But, we're getting closer to the date now, so it's we're not sure how that's going to actually work. We are.
So you don't even have the guidelines on a waiver at this point?
No.
Yeah.
No. So, Lincoln was working very closely with all of the county public health directors and as our schools. But right now it's kind of a wait and see game. So, like I said, that word was thrown out there, but there's not a lot of meat behind it right now. So.
Yeah, it was my understanding, and it was hard to follow, but it was sort of like it seemed like it was there were going to be certain criteria, obviously, that you had to meet, but even then it was going to be pretty much up to county health directors to sign off on it, and then maybe send it to the state, and the state actually grants the waiver, but it wasn't clear exactly what the benchmarks were.
Right, or exactly what this waiver actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's pretty ambiguous. So anyhow, that's what the county and the state are working on that piece. We are just, trying to dot all our I's and cross all our T's every day so that we're ready to do whatever we need to do when it's appropriate for us.
I was reading yesterday a story about Tucson, mostly because I have a sister in Tucson, and so I follow their news, and they had this very strange plan, it seemed, and I hadn't heard of this before, where they were worried about so-called at-risk kids,
mm-hmm.
that, and I don't know if they meant a learning disability type, or if this had to do maybe they had a bad home situation.
Yeah.
Where they were actually going to create space maybe in the gym or in the cafeteria for these kids to be able to be there, that everybody was going to be doing online learning, mostly at home. But if this was an at-risk kids, they would actually have monitors, like in the auditorium,
yeah,
where these kids could be. They'd still be doing online as well.
Right.
And I hadn't seen, I mean, it's obviously a minor thing, but there's every kid has a different situation.
Right.
And to try to craft something to fit all of them is very difficult.
Yeah. And those at-risk kids could be kids whose parents have to work.
Exactly.
You know, and they're 8 years old.
Right.
And so what are they going to do, leave them home all day for 10 hours? No, that's considered an at-risk student, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there. I know that California has in place there. This is another area that they're opening a door that we could possibly apply for daycare licensing up through age 14. A similar situation. If parents can't stay home with their kids, they could be on campus if it's considered a licensed daycare, doing distance learning while the rest of the kids are home. There's just so many moving pieces right now, Bob. It's really difficult to keep up with. That is something that we are looking into as well. Could be something that we could be doing too. So
you've mentioned, because the daycares have not closed.
No, daycares and preschools are still open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're licensed totally differently. So that's another thing that we're looking at as well. So
take my high school senior to the preschool and say she's really only four.
Exactly. We're just trying to do whatever we can to keep our kids safe and keep our kids learning and
And I don't think it's become political. It's become all these things, which it seems like what flavor of ice cream you like has become political these days.
Right.
But I think virtually everybody agrees that in-person learning with everything involved in that, kids being in school, socializing, doing all the extracurriculars, all those things is the best plan, all things being equal.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're all about community, and that's what makes schools so special, you know, regardless, you know, Catholic, private, public, being in your class in a community is just what fills kids' souls and teachers' souls too.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know what we've seen or what we hear just in general and just you know throughout our country is the alienation that kids have felt, not being with their friends and just that survival of what with one another is so critical. So we definitely want to get our kids back on campus. Of course, there's an option for parents if they are not comfortable with that, you know, we will be able to provide a remote learning situation for them. But our goal is to have our kids back on campus by September 8th. We are we're actually starting, all of our schools will be starting on August 17th. But we're starting that most likely the majority of our schools not being on campus because we have to have that 14 days after we're off the watch list situation. So we're doing something called Faith, Growth, and Community for those 3 weeks. It's just a hybrid of a lot of faith building with, you know, families, getting family groups in for in-person, you know, welcome back masses, grade-level retreats, family prayer services, our weekly school-wide, like, virtues things, prayers and religion curriculum and things like that. So we're trying to build that whole faith piece throughout those 3 weeks, in person and remotely. And then we're doing community building. We want to have, you know, kids come in with their parents to do a parent-teacher conference before the school year to kind of find out, you know, what their strengths and areas of growth are, just build relationships with the teachers, you know, all of that we were just talking about, that face-to-face contact, just getting kids in a classroom, seeing what it's going to be like when they do return, just really, really build up the community that way. And then, of course, our growth, our academic growth. So we will start some, you know, initial virtual instruction in our curricular areas with kids doing some virtual instruction. So we're trying to do all three of those and really focus on those themes for the first 3 weeks while we have kids not on campus full-time learning. And hopefully September 8th, that's our goal, that we will all be, you know, we'll be off this watch list by then for 14 days, and hopefully people will behave themselves between now and middle of August so we can do that. So
boy, wouldn't that be nice?
Yes, 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 yes. We really want our kids back at school. And I know the majority of our parents do as well. That's what we're hearing. The wide majority of our parents want kids back at school. So the
difference, though, obviously, between talking about back in person, but with you know, pretty strict guidelines, there's a big difference between a first grader and following guidelines and a high school senior following guidelines.
Sure, yeah.
Because you can't get the high school senior to do anything.
Well, you know, that's what our teachers will be doing. We've had some summer schools that have worked beautifully, and the teachers have just set the expectations and the rules, and we haven't had any issues with kids not following to a T what the rules are. I think kids understand the significance of it. You know, it's not like a typical situation. I think kids know, okay, I have to have my mask on when I'm around the other students. I have to stand, you know, 6 feet. I have to wash my hands for 20 seconds. I have, you know, all those things. I think the kids, they understand that there are consequences if they do not follow the rules. I mean, they're kids, of course, but they've been dealing with this now since March, and have seen, you know, have seen and heard a lot. So we're hoping that that's not going to be an issue, a major issue. Of course, we'll have to keep reminding them, but that'd be something we'll just have to do.
Yeah, boy. So you were talking about plan one, plan two, plan three. What's in plan three?
Well, plan three would be to have everybody back on campus and learning and, you know, and
hopefully September 8th.
September 8th, yeah, we actually have an online principals meeting today with them that we're presenting a distance learning handbook for them with all the different protocols and situations and, you know, just policies, procedures. It's like a 42-page document that we created, and so that's going to go to principals. We're going to go through with them today. In the case that we do have to go into distance learning because, you know, what happened in March, we were in school on March 13th on a Friday, and we're like, you know, pack up the kids' work, you know, their textbooks for, we might be off for 2 weeks, you know, and then on that Monday, we were like in distance learning, you know, virtual learning, and we had never done that before.
Right.
Well, now we've had these months to prepare for it. So, you know, it could happen. It could happen in a flash. We could have a situation where we have one class that can't come back to school the next day because they've, you know, there's been an outbreak in that cohort. So, so we are preparing, you know, parents much better as far as what that means, students much better. So, you know, on a dime, if we need to flip, we can. So that's kind of plan, I guess, plan D, to be prepared, to be really prepared for that, so that it's not like what.
Right.
We're gonna what? What's a Zoom? What? What's my login to Gmail? I mean, all those things that you know we had to figure out along the way. So we have lots of plans. We probably have plan A to Z when we sit down and really think about it. We've got a lot of things planned because there's so many various situations.
I think the dog ate my homework has been replaced by we didn't have connectivity last night.
That's exactly right, and that's a real situation.
Yeah.
So our teachers have to be very flexible about that. We can't expect. It's just different. It certainly isn't what we prefer. But you know, I'm the kind of person like if there's a situation, then we have to deal with it. You know, I'm a problem solver. We're all problem solvers, and we just like this is a problem. How do we solve this? It's not that I wish it wasn't this way. We can't waste our energy on that. We have to say, this is the issue. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know, and just keep kind of plowing through.
Yep, this is the day the Lord has made, you know.
We have to
rejoice and be glad in it. So the CIF that covers high school sports, it postponed fall sports, pushed them into, like, say, football. maybe they could start practicing in December, actually play games in January.
Yeah.
So we may be looking at a Holy Bowl, which is actually, you know, Jesuit and Christian Brothers, which is actually a Mud Bowl.
A Mud Bowl in the middle of January, something, right? Pouring rain.
I'm not sure how playing in January is going to go over in Weed and Alturas and Wairika and some of those places where it actually gets below zero, or Truckee, or, you
that's
know.
Right. Yeah.
That's going to be very, very interesting.
It's also different, you know, and I think about the Holy Bowl, and I've been there at times, and it was like 112 degrees.
I know.
I'm thinking, well, what's worse, January or 112 degrees? I don't know. Yeah. I'm kind of thinking January, where you can bundle up.
I don't know.
You know, it's just, I'm just hoping that this year, I know 2020 has been crazy. I'm hoping that by the time January 1st comes, we go to 2021, that, you know, we'll have vaccines, and we'll just have learned to deal with this better. And I don't know. I there's just no answer. It's just so surreal, isn't it?
It is surreal. Every now and then my wife looks at me and she says, is this really happening?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we can't go to the store. We can't go on vacation. No, I mean, if worrying about how you did in the Monopoly game is your biggest problem, you're way ahead of the game. It's like, and you're worried about it, you know, everyone, grandma in Montana who's got a fever is, gosh, accidentally get exposed somewhere, or maybe you haven't, don't even know it, and you're exposing somebody.
Yeah.
And just all these things that we're doing, and it felt like we had it all tamped down, and it's just going away, just kind of like everybody predicted.
We
went up the curve, and now we're coming down, and then boom, it just came back out of nowhere. When we least expected it in the summer.
Yeah. It's just like a constant fear that weighs on our hearts.
Indeed.
And that is not healthy. And some people handle it better than others, and we have to be really mindful of that as well. You know, it's just an uncertain time, and we have to just pray and have faith that God will direct us and get us through this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can see it in my own kids. How different it is for each of them.
Yeah, exactly. I bet. Yeah.
You know, one just misses her friends in the worst way. Another one who's kind of the artist and has struggled in school with in certain subjects, but is an artist. She's happy to be in her room painting all day. You know, she's just happy as a clam. And my son, who just he's all sports minded and stuff, is like everything got taken away. He just made the volleyball team, and there's no volleyball team. You know, it's different for each kid. And you really aren't sure, you know, how are you doing? I'm okay, you know, and you don't really know, you know.
Yeah. It's there was a video that somebody sent me of a freshman girl from Canada who created this video every day of her during COVID.
Wow.
And it's called NUMB, N-U-M-B, mm-hmm. and it's powerful.
Oh, wow.
To see what I can't say this is typical for a 14-year-old, but what this 14-year-old, how it started and how it's affected her. And it's really, really powerful, powerful to watch that. And there's no words. It's just her documenting every day of her life.
We'll have to check
really,
that out.
Yeah, it's very powerful. And it just makes us as parents and as educators to think, gosh, you know, we're adults. We're having a hard time with it.
Yep.
These young adults, you know, young teens or adolescents, it's extra, extra difficult, I think, for them. I think the little ones are okay. They don't really get it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't understand. They know things are different, but they're still focused on play and fun and, you know, themselves. It's like they're a little more, you know, that way. But I think, you know, I think 10, 11-year-olds and above, it's pretty difficult for them to swallow.
Indeed. Well, Lori, thanks so much for all you do, and we'll we'll look forward to talking to you again soon, and we'll circle September 8th and say a lot of prayers.
I was going to say, let's talk on September 8th, and hopefully we can say, yes, we're all in school today.
Very good.
Okay, Bob, thanks a million.
Hey, God bless.
Okay.
Thanks so much. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.